Welcome to GemaraMarkings.com, your roadmap to the Talmud Bavli. We highly recommend printing out the PDF of the DAF with the markings, or better yet, emailing us to obtain your own copy of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. If this is your first time visiting the site, we highly recommend clicking on the links to view the sample markings, as well as to hear a brief 4-minute audio explanation of the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition. Enjoy your shiur.
Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be beginning and on Daf Kuf Mem Aleph Omen Aleph toward the top. In our Mishnah, we saw a man making a dedication to his as yet unborn child, and he said, "If my wife gives birth to a male, I will give him 100 units of money. If she gives birth to a female, I will give her the newborn, I will give it 200. From the difference in money amounts that the Mishnah chooses, one would get the impression that a female is a greater prize, so to speak, is more advantageous. On the outside margin of our marked Gemaras, you notice a topic heading called Nosei. We've written in on the outside margin, Hesber ledugmas haMishnah, an explanation to the examples of the Mishnah, de'im yolda zohar notel rak men mona, that if she, the wife, gives birth to a male child, the child will get 100, v'im yolda nekeva netelis mosayim, and if it's a female, a girl, then she gets 200. So the Gemara asks the following question. As the Gemara begins, you also notice a kuf that's encircled in the space immediately to the left-hand side of the Gemara text between the Gemara and the Tosfos. This encircled kuf with a following dashed vertical line indicates a long question. The question lasts the number of lines that are opposite this particular marking. The Gemara asks, "Lemeimro debas adifolei miben?" Is the Mishnah coming to suggest that a daughter is Adifa, more advantageous, is better than a son? V'ha'am Rabbi Yochan Mishum Rabbi Shum Bar Yochoi, kol sheino meniach ben liyorsho, anyone who dies without leaving a son to inherit him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu molei olav evra, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is filled with wrath over such an individual, shenemar. The Pasuk, in the context of inheritance, says, V'havartem es nachloso lebito, that in the absence of a son, the inheritance, the estate, is passed over to a daughter. Notice we've dot underlined the expression vahavartem. The Gemara proceeds, ve'ein ha'avora, the expression vahavartem, elo evro, is an expression of wrath, shenemar yoyim evro hayoyimahu. That pasuk is referring to a day in the future, a day of wrath. So we see that the son, having a son, would be considered more advantageous than having a daughter. So why is it that in the Mishnah, when the father is making a dedication, he is making a dedication of a greater sum to the daughter? The Gemara provides answers. Before we proceed with the reading of the Gemara, let us just take note of the geometric forms that appear. You notice a triangle that now appears. A triangle, as all geometric forms in our marking system, indicate a series of something. In the outside margin, you notice the mivneh, the structural note. So you see a triangle featured. Hesberim al adifut hanekeva. These are explanations to explain the advantage of a daughter. The Gemara answers. Le'inyan Yerusha ben Odifle. Le'inyan harvocha bito adifale. With regard to inheritance, the son is considered more advantageous. The reason for that is that a son continues in the same family, or the same tribe, if you will. When inheritance is experienced by the daughter, she has the option of marrying someone from a different tribe. And if that be the case, so the estate gets transferred to another tribe. A person is, generally speaking, interested that things remain in his own domain, so to speak. However, with regard to maintenance and income, as is referred to by the expression harvocha, there a father is more concerned with his providing for her. And the reason that's given for that, the Rashbam explains, is that it's a woman is not expected to seek out her support, her income on her own. The male is considered more apt for pursuing income and support. Therefore, the father feels a greater obligation to take care of the girl. Hence, he would dedicate more money toward her. Another approach, Ushmuel Omar, Hocha b'mevakeres askinan. Here we're talking about a first birth, Uched Rav Chisda, and according to the feeling or the teaching of Rav Chisda, that a first daughter is a greater advantage to a family than having a first son. The Omar Rav Chisda bas tchila simen yafa lebonim. A family having an eldest daughter in it, a first daughter, is considered a good sign with regard to sons. Why is that? Iko diarmi demarbi leacho. One approach is simply that she is in the position, being the eldest, to raise the subsequent children. Marbi is to raise them, to help take care of them. The iko diarmi de lo sholta be'aino bisha. Having a first daughter will provide protection against the evil eye. People who see someone having a first child and it happens to be a first son, the feeling is, generally speaking, people say, oh, how lucky you are to have a firstborn son. And that can create a sense of jealousy and arouse the effects of the ayin hara, the evil eye. So by having a first daughter, that would serve to protect against those forces. Omar Rav Chisda, Ulididi, Binson, Adifon, Li, Miboni. Rav Chisda voices his own opinion and says, I actually prefer having daughters than sons. As to the position of Rav Chisda and trying to understand him, the Tosfos quotes the Rashbam, and he offers his own explanation as well. So if we look first in the Rashbam, Omar Rav Chisda, L'didi bin sonatif ali, Isda mefarshi l'di Rav Chisda b'mevakeres kishmaitse. Some want to explain Rav Chisda as simply referring to the first child, not all children, as he taught just before. Achaloshon midik Omar l'didi, however, from the expression that the Gemara uses, l'didi, to me, Eino Mochiachach, it doesn't sound like he's referring to his original teaching, but rather to something of a personal nature. Venira b'einai shlo niskaimu lobonim ki'im bonos, l'kach misavahoye lobonos. According to the Rashbam's personal opinion, is that he didn't have sons that lasted. He had just daughters, and therefore he grew a certain fondness toward daughters. V'lo nisyashif liyofa daitos Rav Chisda, but the Rashbam says, I don't fully understand Rav Chisda's opinion. The Tosfos offers a different approach and says that there is a lot of evidence in the Shas that Rav Chisda had sons, and Tosfos goes on to enumerate them. Therefore, the Re in the Tosfos says, and you can see this on the lower part of the page under the Dibur HaMasul Lididi, in the middle of that Tosfos, Ela Nira L'Re, De Lahachi Komar Binson Adifa Libi Moni, the reason Rav Chisda found a greater advantage of having daughters than sons, the fishahoyu chasanov gedolei hador, Rava v'mar ukva barchamo, he had sons-in-law that were the gedolei hador. So with his daughters, he was able to choose sons-in-law that were the greatest Torah scholars of their generation. The Gemara continues, v'i boyis ema ha money. Another approach to explain our Mishnah that seems to show an advantage to the daughters is because our Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara asks, hey Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbi Yehuda would account for the example showing advantage to daughters. So as you can see with the markings, we have noted the number 3 in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, namely to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, a 3 with a triangle and a long dashed vertical line, indicating that all of these lines of the Gemara are part of finding the proposition that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. We've also provided another marking, a double underline with dots in it. This is also one of our series markings. In the outside margin, you notice the Mivneh with this marking appearing. Shlovim Limtzo Hey Rabbi Yehuda. We've explained that these are stages to find which Rabbi Yehuda is it. Where does he say something, Shiasbir Adifus Anakeva, that will serve to explain the advantage of a daughter? So let us continue in the Gemara. The Gemara now asking, Hey Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbi Yehuda? Ilema Rabbi Yehuda de Bakol. If you think it's Rabbi Yehuda of the expression Bakol, which will be explained very shortly, Disanya, the Tanaic sources, you can see in our marking system, Tanaic sources appear in frames. Vashem Beirach es Avraham Bakol. That's a pasuk in the Torah. We've featured a dashed underline under the word Bakol because we're focusing on this expression. It says in the pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed Avraham with everything. Rabbi Meir Omer Shelo Hoyolo Bas. His blessing is that Avraham did not have a daughter. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and Rabbi Yehuda is the opinion we're focusing on, hence we've dashed underline his name. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shehoi Solo Bas U Bakol Shmo. Avram had a daughter, and her name was Bakol, and she is the subject of this great blessing, where the pasuk says, Hashem Beirach Es Avraham Bakol, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed him with a daughter named Bakol. If that be the case, so Rabbi Yehuda is the one that expresses that opinion, so you can see that having a daughter is considered a blessing, and hence advantageous. The Gemara rejects this approach, though. Amor, the Shamis Leder Rabbi Yehuda. One can say from this presentation of Rabbi Yehuda the following. Barto nami lo chasre rachmona le'avram. Simply that a daughter also was not withheld from Avraham by God. Rachmona, reference to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rather, the Kodesh Baruch Hu provided Avraham with everything, including a daughter. However, di adifa mi ben mi shamislei, but to suggest that a daughter is greater than a son, who says that? Who says that we can see that from Rabbi Yehuda over here? Eloha Rabbi Yehuda. So we turn to another statement of Rabbi Yehuda, from which we will see what we're looking for. Disanya, the following source. Once again, you see a frame around it, indicating a Tanaic source. The source says, Mitzvah lozun es habonos v'kal v'chomer lebonim. There's two words that the Rashbam claims are not part of the Tanaic source, hence we've put them in brackets. It's rather an explanation from the Gemara. The opening opinion, which we see in the source, says Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's opinion is that it's a mitzvah to support daughters, and all the more so sons, because they are involved in the study of Torah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mitzvah lozun es habonim v'kal v'chomer lebonos, that it's a mitzvah to support the sons of a person, an individual sons, and all the more so daughters, and the explanation is the lo litzalon, so as that they should not be embarrassed or cheapened. The idea being that if the girl has to knock on doors and fend for herself, this will cheapen her, it will berate her, and as a result of that, Rabbi Yehuda's concern is that the daughter, all the more so, more than a son, should be provided for. Hence the greater amount that the Mishnah reflects is in the context of a daughter. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to notice a new geometric form. The house form, another series marking. In the outside margin, we've explained the nosei combined with the mivneh. You notice the house form. Od brisos im chalukos mamon shonim midileel leregel leidas zechorim unikevos. We're going to see more Tanaic sources with amounts of money featured in them that are different than the way that the Mishnah presented the Zohar and the Keva amounts. So you see a source that is going to appear now in the Gemara, and toward the bottom of the Amid another one will appear. And we will now proceed with the Gemara inside. Elohad Desanya. The following source, Yolda Zohar Unekeva. HaZohar Notel Shisha Dinrin, VaNekeva Notelis Shnei Dinrin. Bemai. How are we to explain this? A man is going to give 6 dinar if a son is born, and 2 dinar if a daughter is born. The answer is as follows. Notice in the space between the Gemara and the Tosis, namely to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, there's a tuff that's encircled with a long dash line, indicating this is a long answer. Omar of Ashi, Amrisa l'shmaitza kamei d'Rav Kahana, b'misares. I said over this particular teaching and refer to this source as an example of misares. The Rashbam says, Shesires Tinov ze lemafreya mize, that this man presented his conditions in a staggered or alternating fashion. Shisno aledas teumim. He made a condition regarding the birth of twins. Im yotzo hazochar tchila, v'achar kach hanekeva, if a male is born, their twin birth, and if the male child comes out first, and then the female, ito hazochar mosayim, v'anekeva lo tito klum. The male will get 200, and the female nothing. V'chozar v'sires teno lahasnos aledas mafreya. And then he restated his condition regarding a reversed situation. Im nekeva tchila mona v'achar kach zohar. If the female comes out first, then she will get 100. And the v'achar kach zohar mona, and the male that follows her will also get 100. Let us see the application of that as we go on in the Gemara. Turning back to the Gemara. The Omar, the father said, zohar tchila mosayim, Nekeva achrav lo klum. That if a son is born first, he'll get 200, and the daughter, who's the second birth, will get nothing. However, nekeva tchila mona, if a daughter is born first, she gets 100. Zohar acharel mona, the son that follows will also get 100. And what happened in actuality? The yolda zohar nekeva. The mother gave birth to 2 children, a male and a female. V'lo yadinon heminayu nofak bereisha. And we don't know, in this particular Tanaic source that we learned following the house marking, in that source, the source is featuring, in fact, a twin birth, but we don't know who came out first. As a result of our state of doubt, the resolution is as follows. Zohar shokil mona mimonapshach. The male child will get 100 off the top. In other words, he's guaranteed 100. Namely, even if he's in the poorer position, namely in the second position, he's going to get 100. If he were born first, he would get 200. But in the worst case scenario, he'll get a minimum of 100. Idoch mona, the second 100, have a momon hamuta besafek. The second 100, on the side that he was a firstborn, is considered money that's in a state of doubt. How do we treat money that's in a state of doubt? V'cholkin. It's halved. Hence, instead of getting 100, he'll get half of that. That's 50. In the source, we saw that the son would get shisha dinrim. Shisha dinrim turns out to be a mona vochetzi. It translates into 1.5. Or, in the Zuz currency, 150. We continue with another Tanaic source. V'ha desanya, yolda zohar nekeva ein loy elo mona. The source talks about a birth of a son and a daughter, and it says here, he gets 100. Heichi mishkachas lo. What's the case described here? Omar Avino b'mivasreni. It's not talking about a case of a man dedicating money to the children, but rather it's a man who is a father or a man who is dedicating money to the person that gives him information about his wife's birth. The Rashbam at the bottom, b'mivasreni, lo hisna lo seis lozochu nekeva klum. He didn't make any conditions regarding giving money to the children. Elo l'mivaser, k'demeforesh v'ozil, as will be explained. Desanya, the following source, at the top of Kuf Mem Aleph Omid Beis. Ha'mivasreni b'me nifta rachmo shel ishti. He who informs me which child was born first, im zochor yitol mona. If he tells me that a male was born first, then I will give the informer, the news bearer, 100. Notice underneath we have a base. This was Aleph, namely, this father said that I'll give the news bearer 100 if he tells me a son was born first. Underneath, im nekeva mona. If he tells me a female is born first, I will give him 100. Let's continue with the source on the second line. The father is saying that if the informer or the newsbearer tells me, if it's a zohar, he will, the newsbearer, get 100. Yolda zohar, no telmana. If the lady gives birth to a male first, he will get 100. Im nekeva mona. If he tells me that my wife's first birth was that of a nekeva, he will get 100. Yolda nekeva, no tilmana. And if in fact her first birth was that of a daughter, the newsbearer will get 100. Yolda zocha u nekeva, ein loy ela mona. If the woman gave birth to a male and female, so the newsbearer will get only 100. The Gemara asked, but this father never said that particular scenario. V'ha-zochar unekeva lo omar. The Rashbam, you'll notice in the narrow lines, approximately halfway down, we've provided a little asterisk. U'parchinen v'ha-zochar unekeva lo asni av. This father never, as far as this source is concerned, did not present a case of a man talking about a twin birth. The Auledas Teumim lo asik ho avadaite, and the father didn't even occur to him about his wife bearing twins. Velo omashit al mavasir klum elo al zocher levado ol nekeva levado. As far as the source is concerned, the father was talking about either a male birth or a female birth, but not about a twin birth. So why is it that, according to the source, if there is a twin birth, the newsbearer gets anything? The Gemara answers, the Omar Nami, we are to understand it as follows, that the father said as well, im zachar unikeva nami itomona, that if my wife bears a twin birth, a zachar and an ikeva, I will give the newsbearer as well 100. If that's how we're to understand the source, what do we have here? We have a father who's telling us that he's going to give the newsbearer under all circumstances. Namely, if it's a single male birth, he'll get 100. If it's a single female birth, he'll get 100. If it's a twin birth, he also gets 100. So, what case is being excluded? Since according to this, all news that the newsbearer brings, he gets 100, the source didn't have to enumerate each one of the cases. So what is the goal of this source? What is it trying to exclude? That's the Gemara's question. Elolim utemai. What's being excluded? In other words, what kind of news would the news bearer bear and not get anything? The Gemara answers, lumute nefel. If he comes along and says that your wife miscarried, so under circumstances like that, this particular father would not pay him anything. We notice a slash that appears in the Gemara. This slash indicates that which follows is of a totally new nature. We've provided a topic heading and structural note in the outside margin. The Nosei Mivneh, we notice a bow tie form with a Roman numeral number 1 in the space between the Gemara and the Rashbam, namely to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Underneath that little bow tie Roman numeral number 1, you notice an indication that a number 2 will appear later on. In fact, it appears on Kuf Mem Beis, Amud Beis, in the middle of the Amud. What are these opinions going to be talking about? So we look at the note on the outside margin. Dinam Shel Rav Huna v'Rav Yochanan. And we've indicated Rav Yochanan appears on Kuf Mem Beis, Amud Beis. Hamezakeh Le'ubar Lo Konam. That one who makes a dedication to an unborn, an ubar, the ubar, the unborn, does not acquire. Rav Nachman makshe olav mishnasenu. Rav Nachman will ask on Rav Huna's teaching from our Mishnah. We saw in our Mishnah a father making a dedication to his as yet unborn child, whether it be a male or a female, with different money amounts attached to them. But we saw that that's binding. According to Rav Huna's teaching, it shouldn't be binding. Rav Huna oine, and Rav Huna will answer de lo yodea mi shona mishnaseinu. Rav Huna says, I don't know who taught the Mishnah. In other words, my feeling is, says Rav Huna, that the Mishnah is simply inaccurate. Following Rav Huna's response, we will notice in the Gemara a series of triangles, quite a few in number. In fact, they will last till Kuf Mem Beis Omid Aleph at the top, where we find a number 7. What are these? So in our outside explanation note, we've indicated Sidra Shel Hatzaot, a series of suggestions, L'hasbir Mishnaseinu, to explain our Mishnah, V'lishmor Aldino Shel Rav Huna. And at the same time, if we can explain what is behind our Mishnah, who is author of our Mishnah, we can say that our Mishnah is an accurate source, something based on a reliable background. Rav Huna has his own approach, but as far as we are concerned right now, we are informed that Rav Huna says, I don't know who taught our Mishnah. So all of these attempts will be those to say, why not just suggest that our Mishnah holds like a particular name, and you'll see a series of names that are featured as you go down. If you follow the triangles, you can see the first one, for example, says, why not just say that our Mishnah is Rebbe Meir? And Rav Huna would adopt an opinion of those that disagree with Rebbe Meir. Or the second triangle says, why not suggest our Mishnah is Rebbe Yossi? The third triangle says, why not suggest our Mishnah is Rebbe Yochanan ben Broken? All along the way, following these suggestions, we'll also understand that Rav Huna adopts an opinion that disagrees with those that are presented. But just to leave it as Rav Huna says right now, the Mishnah, I don't know who taught it. It seems to say that our Mishnah is without a basis. In fact, when we get to Kuf Mem Beis Amud Aleph, where we will have a final suggestion as to how to establish our Mishnah, once again, Rav Huna will offer his response, and at that point, we will just have to leave it as Rav Huna holding that I don't know who possibly taught our Mishnah. So let us proceed with the Gemara. Hahu di Omar lo lidvisu. A man said to his wife, Nichosai lahai de ma'abris. My property I'm dedicating to the one that you are pregnant with. Omar Rav Huna, have a mezake l'ubar. Rav Huna says that this is a person trying to make a dedication to a fetus, v'hamezake l'ubar lo kona, and one who dedicates, who grants something to the unborn, to the child that has as yet not come out into the world, lo kona, the child does not acquire. Eis v'Rav Nachman the Rav Huna. Rav Nachman raises an objection to what Rav Huna just said from our Mishnah. Ho'imer, im yolda ishti zohar yito mona, yolda zohar, no telmona. If a man says that if my wife gives birth to a male child, then I will give him 100. And the source says that if she does give birth to that child, he gets 100. So we see that one can make a dedication to he who is as yet unborn. Omar Lei, Rav Huna says back, Mishnosenu eini yodea mishana. As far as our Mishnah is concerned, I don't know who taught it. Indicating that the Mishnah is, as far as Rav Huna is concerned, without a basis. The Gemara asks, and we see the triangle, the first of these series of attempts, Vilem Olei Rabbi Meir, he, why not say that the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Meir, the Omar Odo Makne Dovar Shelo Boli Olam, that a person has the ability to transfer that which is not as yet in the world. The Gemara says, it's true that Rabbi Meir holds that way. Amor deshamis leilu Rabbi Meir lidover sheshno ba'olam. As far as Rabbi Meir is concerned, it's true that you can transfer something that has not yet come to be, but that's provided you're transferring it to someone that is around. However, to transfer to someone that is not yet around, even Rabbi Meir says that doesn't happen. L'davar she'eno ba'olam, mi shamis lei, but transferal of a davar shelo ba'olam to someone that has not come to be yet, who says that Rabbi Meir would accept such a thing? V'leimo lei Rabbi Yosihi, why could it not be said to Rav Huna that the Mishnah is based on Rabbi Yosi? The Omar Ubor Koni, according to Rabbi Yosi, as we will see shortly, an ubar, an unborn, does have the ability to acquire. In order to appreciate the coming piece of Gemara, a little bit of background is necessary. We will be talking about a marriage where a Bas Yisrael marries a Kohen. A Bas Yisrael, when she marries a Kohen, as she gains the rights to eating Truma. When, however, she becomes a widow, the Bas Yisrael would go back to her father's home and lose the rights to eating Truma. If a Bas Yisrael who married a Kohen happens to have children that survive, in other words, her children are Kohanim, she has a right to continue eating Truma based on her children. A Kohen also feeds his avodim with truma. When the kohen dies, if he left children who inherit the estate, they inherit the avodim continue eating truma. However, if, however, the woman, this Bas Yisrael, is left a widow, and she also is left pregnant, the slaves that are part of the estate will not be able to eat truma. The reason for that is that a Bas Yisrael who is left a widow, even though she had been married to a Kohen, and even though the fetus is that when born would be a Kohen, while it's unborn, it's considered a zar. Ubar b'mei imoi is considered a zar. A zar meaning a non-Kohen. And as such, he, this ubar, does not have truma rights, but he also is a partner in the ownership of the slaves of this family. And since he's a part owner of the slaves, those slaves are not able to eat truma. It's probably a temporary situation, because when the child is born, so this status changes. But for the time being, he being, this ubar being a non-Kohen status, because he is as yet unborn, and also being considered a partial owner of the slaves, he prevents them from eating the truma. What do we see from all of this? We see a fetus, an unborn, being considered an owner, having possession of, partial possession of these slaves. So, such an opinion could be used to explain our mission as well. If we're looking for a source that indicates ownership on the part of an ubar, we can associate it with Rabbi Yossi. We can take a look at the Rashbam in the middle of the wide lines. Disnan, Beperek Almona Biyavomas, Bas Yisrael Shiniseis Lekoyen, Umeis, Vehinicha Meuberes, the Bas Yisrael who had married a Kohen and leaves her, after the Kohen dies, leaves her pregnant, Lo Yochlu Avodeho Betruma, Mepnechelku Shul Ubar, the slaves that are part of this estate are not able to eat from the truma because of the portion that in the slaves that is owned by the ubar. Kinemeforish hosom, as the Gemara explains in Yevomis, the ubar b'mei zora zarhu, that a fetus in the womb of a non-kohenes is considered himself a zar, shu ubar posel ve'eno ma'achil, divrei Rabbi Yossi. The ubar has the ability to render unfit someone else, but does not have the power to grant that someone else the ability to eat. And hence, in this case, the ubar prevents the slaves from eating and does not enable them to continue eating. Klomar, shar ubar shnis abro yisraelis mikoyin ba'alo shemes posel es ho'eved milecho betruma. As we just said, the fetus in this pregnant Yisraelis that became pregnant from a Kohen, her husband, who died, renders the Eved, the slave, unfit for eating Truma. Because of his portion, namely, the Ubar, while in the womb of a non-Kohen, a non-woman Kohen, is considered a Zar. And hence, below Karina Beso, Hain Yochlu Belachmo, he's not considered the ones that are born in the household of a Kohen who have the right to eat Truma. Why? De'eno yelido shel Kohen, likros Kohen. He's not considered born of a Kohen because he hasn't been born. Ad sheyetze la'avir ha'olam. V'eno ma'achilas imo Yisraelis she'ibrosa mikohen. And as a result of that, this fetus's mother as well cannot eat Truma, though she became pregnant from a Kohen. De'kaimel anhasam she'ichilas betruma b'shvil b'no Kohen. Kilubalo Kohen Chai. We can stop at this point with regard to the Rashbam, but the point is being emphasized that we see here ownership by an ubar of the slaves. We now turn back to the Gemara text. The Gemara had just suggested Velemo Le Rabbi Yossi Hi Dioma Ubar Koni Disnan Ubar posel v'eino ma'achil divrei Rabbi Yossi, as we just described, that the ubar renders unfit. It could be he renders his mother unfit if the ubar, we're talking about a Yisraelis, a Zara that married a Kohen, and she's currently pregnant, that ubar prevents her from continuing to eat truma, v'eino ma'achil, and he does not enable others to eat, even though when he's born, he will enable others to eat. Namely, the slaves will be able to eat. His mother will be able to eat. But as long as he is unborn, he's not ma'achil. Divrei Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara points out, or rejects this suggestion. True, lefi Rabbi Yossi, according to Rabbi Yossi, the ubar is said to be an owner of the slaves. Nevertheless, we cannot bring a proof from this to our Mishnah, or to explain our Mishnah as being based on Rabbi Yossi. Shaini Yerusha Haba Me'eleha. Inheritance is different. Inheritance comes on its own. And something that comes on its own, that's automatic, an ubar, the unborn, can in fact be considered an owner. In this case, owner of slaves. But for an outside force to actively grant ownership to an ubar, to initiate a new ownership on the part of the ubar, that cannot happen. The Gemara continues, Valema le Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokahi. Why not assign our Mishnah to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, the Amar lo shno Yerusha v'lo shno Matona? According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, no distinction is made between inheritance and gifts. Disnan, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer imomar al misha roi liyorsho dvorav kayomen. If a father chooses to grant all of his estate to one of his sons, this is an opinion that we've spent extensive time analyzing in the previous perek. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, a father can grant ownership to one of his sons. That's what's considered here, Misha Roy Liorsho. If he has a group of sons, he can grant all of his property to one of his sons. What we're trying to emphasize at this point in the Gemara, that this is an opinion that makes no distinction between Yerusha and Matana, and hence we've dashed, underlined the expression Matana. So we see someone that might be the author of our Mishnah that would grant ownership even through a means other than Yerusha. The Gemara rejects this. More accurately, Rav Huna would reject this. Amor deshamis le the Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, one could say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's opinion applies ledover sheesh nabolim. That's when you're granting ownership to someone who is around. However, ledover sheeno ba'olam, however, to someone that's not around yet, like an ubar, mi omar, who says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka would say such a thing works? The Gemara continues with suggestion number 4, v'lei mole. Why can it not be suggested to Rav Huna, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokahi, v'sovar lo k'Rabbi Yossi, that our Mishnah is a hybrid opinion, namely it's an opinion adopted by Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who in turn holds like Rabbi Yossi. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan Broka represents the opinion that no distinction is made between Yerusha and Matana. And Rabbi Yochanan Broka, if he would hold like Rabbi Yossi, he would in effect be saying that an ubar acquires ownership. So what are we saying? That an ubar can acquire ownership through Matana as well, not just through Yerusha. And hence we can explain our Mishnah like that. That our Mishnah is Rabbi Yochanan Broka, who holds like Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara, Rav Huna could respond very simply, Mi Yemar de Sovar Lo, who says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka holds like Rabbi Yossi? In order to suggest suggestion 4, you're working on a premise that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka adopts Rabbi Yossi's opinion that an ubar is kone, but we don't have any basis for insisting on that. Suggestion number 5, V'lei mo le b'mivasreni. Why not say that the Mishnah is talking about a dedication made to a news bearer, and the news bearer is someone that's around, and the news bearer is going to get the money, not the ubar. Hence, Rav Huna didn't have to say that the Mishnah is something that I don't know who the author is. He could have said the Mishnah is not talking about the ubar getting the money. I, Rav Huna, hold that one cannot grant ownership to an ubar. And the Mishnah that talks about someone getting money, it's not talking about the ubar getting money. Rather, it's talking about a newsbearer. The Gemara rejects this. Ihachi, if so, if the Mishnah was talking about a newsbearer, dekotani seifa, the end of the Mishnah, on kuf mem omid beis, it says, v'im ein sham yoresh elahu yoresh hakol. The end of the Mishnah says that if there is no other heir other than him. The Mishnah on Kuf Mem Amud Beis was talking about a tumtum, the child whose gender is not clear. And the Mishnah concludes that if there is no other heir other than the tumtum, so he will inherit everything. So what was the subject of the Mishnah up till that point? It must have been talking about those who could be heirs. The Gemara goes on, if you want to set up our mission as about talking about the newsbearer getting the money, Yoresh Maya Vidite, what's the role of inheritance doing in the context of a newsbearer? A newsbearer is an outsider, is unrelated, he doesn't inherit anything. So it's not likely that our Mishnah is talking about a newsbearer. V'leimo le b'sheyolda. Why not say that the Mishnah is talking about a child that has already been born at the point that the father is making the dedication? So the Gemara says, rejects that too. Ihachi dekotani seifa. When you look at the latter part of the Mishnah, and it says, V'im omar kol ma sheteled ishti yitoil, hare ze yitoil. If a person says, anything that my wife will bear, and we've dashed underlined the expression sheteled, if he says that, then even the tumtum would get. But we are emphasizing the expression shetelet, a future expression. So the Gemara says that if our Mishnah is talking about, like was suggested in number 6, b'sheyolda, then kol shetelet, kol sheyolda miboyale, the expression should not be as it is in the Mishnah in the future, but rather it should be in the past. Kol sheyolda is what it should have said. So we reject suggestion 6 as well as talking about a dedication to an already born child when we see that the spirit, that the Mishnah is talking about future birth. V'leimo le di omar l'cheshete leid. Why couldn't the Mishnah have been explained that the father used this expression in his clause, in his dedication? Let us glance at the Rashbam at the top. V'leimole Ravuna. Why couldn't Ravuna have explained the Mishnah as follows? Masnisin de Omar im teleid ishti zohar, tnu le mona lichishet teleid. That the father in the Mishnah is talking about a man saying, if my wife gives birth to a male, give the child 100 when he is born, emphasizing what we've dashed underlined in the Rashbam, lichashetelein, delo zochile klum achi voleid. In such a case, the father is not granting ownership until actual birth. V'ein zem ezakele ubar. And this is not similar to my case, would say Rav Huna. My case was talking about giving ownership to he who is right now a fetus, as yet an unborn. The Amrino Liel de Lokona, that we said before, that Mizaki Leubar, we said on the previous Omid, where we have featured Rav Huna's name in a bow tie, where we said that he who is as yet unborn does not acquire. So why could we not have said that the Mishnah is talking about the case where the father added the clause or the term lichashetelein? Hence, the Mishnah could be understood under those terms, and Rav Huna would not have had to say, I don't know who taught the Mishnah. And Rav Huna's din, Hamazak Elubar, is talking about granting to possession to someone that is yet unborn. The Gemara answers why Rav Huna didn't adopt this approach. Rav Huna letameh. Rav Huna, in responding that the Mishnah is Eini Yodea Mishon, I don't know who taught it, and did not set it up as Lichishet Heleid, because he is consistent with his own opinion. The Omer Rav Huna, Af Lichishet Heleid Lo Kona. That even by adding that expression, the child would not gain ownership, would not gain possession. At this point, the Gemara presents three opinions on this very topic. Amir Sashem, next time, we will go over Rav Huna's opinion and the other two opinions. At this point, though, we conclude our shiur for today.